Have you ever wondered how a seemingly perfect property investment, great location, super high rental yields, just ends up being a massive money pit?
Oh, absolutely. It happens all the time.
Right. Like, imagine you sign the paperwork on this beautiful apartment building. The neighborhood is booming. The spreadsheets you looked at promised a flawless 8% annual return.
And I'm sure the marketing brochure belonged in a museum. They always do.
Exactly. But then, 6 months later, your anchor tenant breaks their lease. The roof develops this mysterious leak that, of course, isn't covered by insurance.
Naturally.
And suddenly, instead of collecting all this nice passive income, you are just bleeding cash every single month. So, for today's deep dive, we're looking at a framework that proves the most sophisticated investors don't just look for reasons to buy.
Right. They actively hunt for reasons to walk away, which
Right.
is such a massive shift in mindset.
It really is. And the source we're using today to understand this is an incredibly insightful document from Osul Gamma. It's titled A Practical Property Due Diligence Checklist for Investors.
It's a great read. Really breaks down the mechanics of risk.
Yeah, and our mission today is to essentially arm you, the listener, with the actual mindset of an experienced investor. We want to move way beyond those shiny marketing brochures and uncover what actually makes a property a smart buy.
Or a cleverly disguised trap. Because honestly, whether you're prepping to buy your very first residential rental or looking into fractional ownership,
Which we'll definitely get into later.
well, for sure, or even if you just want to understand how the wealthy critically evaluate opportunities, this mental framework is basically a superpower.
It totally is. And, we all naturally start evaluating an investment by looking at the shiny numbers
Of
first.
course, it's human nature.
You open a prospectus and your eyes dart straight to the rental income, the projected returns, the occupancy rates.
The what's in it for me
Yeah.
part of the pitch.
Right. But the source material makes a really crucial point right up front about those numbers. And that is, the danger begins the exact moment you accept them at face value.
Yeah, because investors frequently get completely blinded by those headline figures. I mean, people will spend hours agonizing over like a projected 8% versus a 9% yield.
Yeah.
But they spend almost zero time trying to understand the mechanical assumptions that were used to calculate that yield.
Yeah.
You have to remember, every single forecast is basically just an educated guess.
An educated guess built on a fragile stack of assumptions. Okay, let's unpack this. Because if I'm looking at a super detailed prospectus from a reputable developer and it outlines an 8% projected yield, I'm assuming a team of very smart accountants and market analysts ran those numbers. Are you saying we just can't trust the math?
Well, the math itself is usually flawless. The accountants know how to add.
Okay, good.
But the inputs driving that math, those are entirely hypotheticals. What's fascinating here is the critical difference between possibility and probability.
Oh, I like that distinction. Possibility versus probability.
Right. A projection just shows you what is mathematically possible if literally every single variable goes perfectly according to plan.
Like the building finishes construction on the exact target date?
Exactly. It's fully leased on day one, tenants never default, and maintenance costs just miraculously stay flat for a decade.
Which never happens.
Never. Probability, on the other hand, is what happens when a supply chain crisis delays construction by 6 months, or when inflation drives up your property management fees by 10%.
Wow, yeah. So you're saying the experienced investor isn't actually looking at the final yield number at all?
Not really. They're forensically examining the ingredients that went into making that number. The Osul Gamma checklist points out that successful investors don't start their due diligence looking for reasons to validate the deal.
They actively search for reasons to reject it.
Yes, they try to dismantle it.
See, I want to push back on that approach just a little bit.
Go for it.
Isn't actively searching for reasons not to invest just, well, being overly pessimistic, like a recipe for analysis paralysis?
How do you mean?
Well, if you look hard enough for a flaw in literally anything, you will find one. It feels a bit like relying on a dating profile where everyone only posts their absolute best angles.
Right, they love hiking, they volunteer on weekends.
Exactly. If you go into the first date actively interrogating them, like actively looking for reasons they might be a terrible partner, you're just going to end up alone, right?
That's a funny way to look at it.
Yeah.
But think about it this way. If you marry the person from that dating profile without ever seeing how they handle a delayed flight or, a financial setback,
Ah.
you are taking a massive uncalculated risk. The goal isn't to be a cynic, it's about introducing deliberate friction.
deliberate friction.
Yeah, the excitement of a high potential return creates all this emotional momentum. You just want to jump in, sign the papers, and secure the deal.
You don't want to miss out.
Exactly. So by forcing yourself to hunt for the flaws, you create a vital pause between initial interest and final action.
A vital pause. Wow, so you're trying to break the illusion of the spreadsheet before it breaks your bank account.
You nailed it. And if the opportunity still makes financial sense after you've tried your hardest to poke holes in it, well, then your confidence is anchored in solid evidence, not just blind market optimism.
Okay, that makes total sense. So if we've firmly established that spreadsheets are essentially, you know, best case scenario fiction,
which they are,
then that naturally shifts the conversation to what we should be looking at first, which is the physical reality of the asset itself.
Yes. Before a single number goes into a spreadsheet, you have to verify the underlying demand. What is it about this specific physical space that creates inherent value?
Because an investment is really only as strong as the human or business need to actually occupy that space.
Right. And the drivers for that demand shift dramatically depending on what you're buying.
Sure. Like, residential property is totally different from commercial. For residential, you're looking at population growth, local school districts, proximity to major employers.
You're trying to answer a very human question. Why would a family need to live here?
Right. But for commercial property, a great school district means absolutely nothing.
Nothing at all. You are entirely dependent on the local business environment. Things like logistical supply chains, heavy foot traffic, or, you know, the financial health of a few key anchor tenants.
So a quiet, loofy neighborhood is perfect for a family home.
But an absolute death sentence for a retail center.
Right. And the text introduces this really brilliant filtering mechanism for this. They call it the no property background test.
I love this concept.
Yeah, the premise is super simple. You should be able to explain the core economic driver of your investment to someone who knows absolutely nothing about real estate or finance.
Right. It's like the difference between explaining a neighborhood lemonade stand versus trying to explain a complex crypto derivative.
Yes. If I tell a friend, hey, I bought a lemonade stand on the busiest corner of the park, right next to the playground where all the kids play in the summer.
The underlying demand is instantly obvious. Kids get thirsty.
Exactly. But if I say, yeah, I'm buying a tranche of a synthetic collateralized debt obligation based on algorithmic yield farming.
They are going to look at you like you've completely lost your mind.
Because I probably have. If you have to rely on convoluted financial jargon and like five layers of economic assumptions just to explain why a building is going to make money,
you are no longer investing. You are just gambling that a highly complex machine doesn't break.
Wow. Yeah, gambling versus investing.
The ultimate goal here isn't just knowing how a property performed in the past. Anyone can pull up a historical chart and look at past returns.
Right. Past performance is not indicative of future results, as they always say.
Exactly. You need to deeply understand why it performed that way, what specific conditions drove that success, and, crucially, are those conditions structurally sound moving into the future?
But wait, if identifying underlying demand is the key, doesn't that just lead us right back to the oldest real estate cliche in the book?
Give me location.
Yeah. We all know location, location, location. It's the golden rule we've been spoon-fed since day one. So if we know why a property is valuable, doesn't it just come down to buying in the hottest location?
You would think so. But it is actually one of the most persistent illusions in investing.
Really?
Yeah, the Osel Gamma text spends significant time debunking this cliche. Because blindly following the crowd into a popular location is usually the fastest way to compress your yields and skyrocket your risk.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because, I mean, we've always been told the trendy neighborhood is the safe bet.
But the math completely changes once the hype takes over. By the time every social media influencer and lifestyle magazine is talking about a booming new district,
the developers and the sellers are already pricing that excitement into the asset.
Exactly. You are paying a massive premium just for the hype, which means your margin for error essentially vanishes.
The text uses the current market in Saudi Arabia as a perfect example of this, right?
It does. It's a fantastic illustration. Across the kingdom right now, you are seeing unprecedented infrastructure development.
Huge projects, exploding tourism initiatives, incredible urban growth.
It is a textbook boom market. But the text explicitly warns that a rising tide does not mean every single development is a sound investment.
Let's look at the mechanics of that. Why would a property fail if the entire city around it is booming?
Well, during the initial phase of a massive urban boom, you have this sheer influx of contractors, expat workers, new businesses. It creates a localized housing shortage.
Okay, so demand is just artificially through the roof.
Right. So a developer can build a poorly laid out apartment building with, you know, terrible parking, inefficient cooling systems, bad logistics.
And it will still lease up on day one.
Simply because demand is vastly outstripping supply. The rising tide temporarily hides all those fundamental flaws.
Oh, I see.
But 3 years later, when construction finally catches up and renters actually have choices, that flawed building is the first to see a mass exodus of tenants.
And suddenly your rental yields just plunge.
Exactly. So a cautious investor is looking way past the broader market hype. They are hunting for strong, localized fundamentals.
This really highlights the difference between chasing high yield and securing reliable income, doesn't it?
Absolutely. A trendy short-term rental in a tourist hotspot might show a massive yield on paper today.
But what happens when the local municipality suddenly changes short-term rental regulations?
Or when a new, even trendier district opens up across town and siphons away all your tourist traffic? The trendy spot gives you high yield today, but massive anxiety tomorrow.
Wow. Are you saying a boring, ugly brick building situated next to, like, a major hospital and a reliable train station is actually a better buy?
Oftentimes, yes. It might offer a lower initial yield, but it provides consistent, weatherproof income. The reliable tenant working at that hospital is going to pay your rent during a recession.
The trend-chasing tourist on a weekend getaway probably won't.
Exactly. The text asks a really great question to test this. If the excitement around this specific location disappeared tomorrow, would there still be a compelling, practical reason for people to live or work there?
Right. Like, if you strip away the trendy coffee shops, the art installations, the Instagram hype, is there still a grocery store? Are there still major employers?
Yes. Consistency builds confidence far more than short-term hype ever will.
Okay, so let's say you've done your homework, you've ignored the glossy brochure, you've verified the actual physical demand, and you've avoided the trap of overpaying for location hype.
You found a fundamentally sound, incredibly boring building.
Right. The natural instinct at this point is to think, great, the hard work is over, where do I sign?
But the Osol Gamma text points out that surviving normal sunny day conditions just isn't enough.
Now you have to see what happens when the economic environment turns hostile.
You have to actively try to break the investment.
Which brings us to the stress testing phase.
Yes. Think of it like buying a heavy winter coat. You don't test that coat by wearing it inside the heated department store and just looking in the mirror to see if it looks nice.
Right. You need to know how the materials hold up in an absolute blizzard.
Exactly. Will the zipper freeze shut when the temperature drops? Will the seams rip if you fall? You have to aggressively visualize the worst-case scenario.
Okay, let's bring on the blizzard then. The source material provides some specific stress test scenarios. Let's walk through them. The first one involves weakening demand.
Right. So let's say a major employer in the area, like a massive corporate headquarters or a manufacturing plant, unexpectedly downsizes.
Yeah.
Or just relocates entirely.
Which happens all the time.
You have to calculate the localized impact of that. Would this specific property still attract tenants? And crucially, could you attract them without slashing your rental rates?
Because if you are forced to drop rents by, say, 15% just to maintain your occupancy, does your cash flow still cover your monthly debt obligations?
Or are you suddenly subsidizing the property out of your own pocket every month?
Ouch. Which bleeds right into the second scenario, lower occupancy rates overall.
Right. Most of these glossy prospectuses assume a stabilizing occupancy rate of, you know, 95%.
But what if a recession hits and your occupancy drops to 75% for an entire year?
The math gets ruthless very quickly. And the third test is about operating margins in the face of unexpected costs.
Ah, like inflation.
Exactly. What happens when inflation hits 6%? Your property management fees, your insurance premiums, your maintenance contracts, they all reprice upwards immediately.
But if your tenants are locked into multi-year leases with, like, a 2% annual rent cap,
your operating margins are getting crushed in real time.
Or consider a catastrophic maintenance failure. What if the commercial HVAC system just dies in year two and requires a $50,000 replacement?
Did you model a capital reserve for that? Or did you just assume smooth sailing for the next 10 years?
Honestly, the glossy brochure never includes a line item for the roof caved in or inflation destroyed our margins.
Yep.
Walking through the sheer mechanics of those scenarios, makes my stomach drop a little. It totally strips away that warm, fuzzy feeling of discovering a great deal.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that warm, fuzzy feeling is the exact emotional state that gets novice investors into profound trouble.
Really? Just being optimistic.
Yes. A staggering number of catastrophic financial mistakes happen simply because people spend 100% of their analytical energy modeling what could go right.
They just fall in love with the upside.
Exactly. But the best opportunities are rarely the ones with the most astronomical initial projections. They're the ones with enough mathematical padding to survive the stress test.
It is entirely about resilience, not perfection.
Exactly.
Okay, so assuming my boring, fundamentally sound property survives the blizzard, I've run the numbers. I know I can absorb a drop in occupancy, a spike in inflation, and a broken boiler without facing foreclosure.
It's an objectively resilient, quote-unquote, good investment.
Right. But the source material throws one final, highly personal hurdle at us. Surviving the stress test doesn't necessarily mean it's the right asset for you.
Goal alignment. It's the final filter. Because an objectively phenomenal investment can still be a terrible strategic move if it doesn't serve your specific financial needs.
So, like, if you require immediate liquid cash flow to pay for, say, a child's university tuition in 2 years.
But you purchase a piece of raw, undeveloped land on the outskirts of a growing city.
Even if you bought that land at a massive discount, and it appreciates wildly over the next 15 years.
It is still the wrong investment for you. It failed your immediate liquidity goals.
It's really the difference between needing income, needing aggressive long-term appreciation, or simply needing defensive diversification to protect the wealth you've already built.
Right. A high-yield, management-intensive commercial asset might be an incredible opportunity for a hungry young investor who has the time and energy.
But it's an absolute nightmare for a retiree who simply wants wealth preservation and peace of mind. So what does this all mean for the everyday listener who might be looking at the absolute frontier of real estate right now? And by that, I mean fractional property ownership platforms.
Yes, fractional ownership is huge right now.
The source explicitly mentions Osul Gamma's focus on investor education in this space. And it notes they are currently testing within REGIE's regulatory sandbox in Saudi Arabia.
For those who might not know, a regulatory sandbox is essentially a safe, controlled testing ground.
Okay.
It allows innovative financial tech companies to pilot new models, like dividing property ownership into digital shares, under the direct supervision of government regulators.
Like the Real Estate General Authority in Saudi Arabia.
Right. Before those platforms are rolled out to the broader public, they test them to ensure the consumer protections actually work.
That makes a lot of sense. So if I am using one of these platforms and I'm only buying a tiny fraction of a property, maybe just like a few $1,000 worth of shares in a massive commercial plaza, do I really need to do all this intense institutional level due diligence? I mean, it's just a small slice of the pie.
You need to do it more than ever.
Really? Why?
Because fractional ownership is merely a legal and financial structure. Yes, it is a highly efficient way of dividing up the equity and the costs.
Right.
But the structure itself does not magically generate a return. The underlying asset, the physical bricks, the mortar, the actual demand for that specific location, that is what generates the cash.
So how does the stress test apply when you only own a tiny fraction? Like if the boiler breaks or the anchor tenant leaves, how does that impact me as a fractional owner?
That is exactly what you need to investigate before buying a share. If occupancy drops and the property starts bleeding cash, does the platform issue a capital call?
Meaning I have to inject more of my own money just to keep it afloat.
Exactly. Or if the property fails the stress test entirely and needs to be liquidated at a loss, how are the voting rights handled among hundreds of fractional owners?
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about voting rights.
If the building's location was purely based on hype and the demand dries up, it is going to be a toxic investment, whether you hold the deed to the entire complex or just a 1% digital token.
Because shared ownership structures do not absolve you from the responsibility of research.
Not at all. The fundamental mechanics of risk remain completely identical.
As we synthesize all of this, the most glaring takeaway for me is that the concept of a perfect property investment is just a complete myth.
It really is. It doesn't exist on a spreadsheet, and it certainly doesn't exist in the real world.
Every single opportunity in the market requires trade-offs. They all rely on assumptions, and they all carry distinct, localized risks.
Right. Long-term wealth creation isn't about possessing some magic crystal ball that predicts the future.
Or tirelessly hunting for that one flawless unicorn deal.
It's about building a robust defensive framework. It's about slowing down that emotional momentum and relentlessly asking the unglamorous, difficult questions.
Doing this level of rigorous due diligence, you know, auditing the headline figures, proving the underlying physical demand, avoiding the hype cycle, and stress testing the worst-case financial scenarios.
It grants you the ultimate superpower as an investor.
Which is?
It gives you the logical, evidence-based confidence to walk away.
The confidence to walk away. Wow. Because if you don't fully grasp the mechanics of the risk, you are constantly driven by the fear of missing out, aren't you?
Completely. You see a rising market and feel compelled to just jump in blindly.
But when you actually do the math, run the stress tests, and clearly identify the structural flaws, walking away from a hype deal no longer feels like missing out.
No, it feels like a massive victory. The Osul Gamma text crystallizes this perfectly. They state that successful investing is often about avoiding poor opportunities rather than feeling compelled to pursue every available one.
Which leaves us with a fascinating broader implication to wrap up on. We've spent this entire time dissecting the mechanics of real estate. But if the most profitable and protective investments are often the ones you actively choose not to make after completing your due diligence,
yeah.
How might this exact mindset reshape how we navigate other massive areas of our lives?
Oh, taking the friction of the stress test and applying it beyond finance. I love that.
Exactly. Think about this habit of actively seeking out hidden flaws. Deliberately pausing between initial excitement and final commitment, and aggressively modeling the worst-case scenario.
Like applying that institutional rigor to a major career pivot.
Yes. Or starting a new business venture with a close friend, instead of just accepting the glossy brochure of a new job offer.
Being totally blinded by the prestigious title and the bump in salary.
Right. You stress test the underlying mechanics. What is the actual turnover rate in that department? What happens to your role if the current management team leaves next year? You look past the headline figures.
You stop getting swept up in the hype of your own life decisions.
Yeah.
And you start demanding evidence of fundamental stability.
Because whether you are evaluating a trendy new commercial development or a flashy new career path, you don't want to wake up 3 years later and realize that the seemingly perfect opportunity was actually a meticulously designed trap.
You have to guarantee the reality survives the stress test. Treating your major life decisions with the same ruthless due diligence you apply to your capital. That is a powerful framework.
It really is. It's definitely something for all of us to chew on as we evaluate the next big opportunity that crosses our path. Until next time, keep asking the hard questions.